Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
I'm Tank Sinatra.
And I'm Investigator Slater.
And together we co-host a podcast called Psychopedia, which is a true crime podcast infused with comedy, making it a crimedy. Each week, Investigator Slater brings us a wild and thoroughly researched true crime case. I'm here to digest it all and react just like you probably are, right there on the other side of the microphone.
Somehow, I've got to present each case with the detail and respect it deserves, while also cracking up at Tank's perfectly timed humor and thought-provoking questions.
Listen to and follow Psychopedia on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Commanders, Jay Gruden here. They say never kick a man while he's down. Well, the Cowboys are down. Kick the hell out of them.
Oh, they kicked the hell out of, well, not them. Not the ball. Maybe their own self? Their own fannies? Who knows? That was Jay Gruden on Twitter, where you can follow him on the old X machine. Why don't you do so? For entertaining little videos like that and underdog fantasy information, at @coach_JayGruden. And Jay Gruden joins us right here, right now, on the air and on the road. Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly and Fairfax, F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Starling. Home of Ted Britt for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com. And without further ado, we say hello to Mr. Jay Gruden. Happy Thanksgiving. Early on, Jay, how are you?
I'm doing good. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Kick them while they're down, Jay.
they let them back up.
Yeah, they didn't kick anything good yesterday, Jay. Yeah, that's the problem.
They had a chance early to just punch them. I mean, you ever see an MMA fight when the guys get down in the corner, the guys jump on them, just start punching the hell out of them?
Oh, yeah.
They had a chance to do that early. I mean, they had drives at the plus 40, the plus 47, the minus 43, the plus 40, 39. And, Didn't get anything being
there in person. I kept tweeting about that Xing, whatever the hell it's called nowadays, and I just kept harping on that exact thing. And then it was the Austin Seibert show after that. Let's take this piece by piece, I guess. Let's start with the whole special teams and what we were just talking about before you joined us. Obviously, Seibert has been reliable for them, had a terrible day. Understood. He was put in kind of maybe a tough situation. We'll get to that part. From a coaching perspective, what do you think you would have done after the McLaurin touchdown? Down a point, 21 seconds left at that point after the play is run. You have all the momentum on your side. You going for two, or do you think DQ played it right?
I think that's one where I think you'd, if you feel like you're the better team, you kick it and go into overtime. You know, if you feel like you're not the better team, you're on the road, maybe you go for two, make it a one play and decide it. But I think Coach Quinn had to think that, you know, hell, we've had our ups and downs here. We're the better team. We're going to get the ball back. They have their backup quarterback in, and we're going to win the game.
It's a short week, right? I mean, you know, they're thin because of injuries too.
Yeah, exactly right. The only issue is now that the extra points moved back and your kicker's already missed one field goal. It's those aren't givens anymore, especially in Washington off that turf, you know, the field. We all know that there's been a lot of missed kicks on that field. But,
wait, place kickers don't
place 2.5 yards is not easy to get, but it is a Cowboy defense, and Jaden has had a lot of success.
Right.
You know, with the zone reads and the, you know, the RPOs and all that stuff. So,
let me ask you this, because he did on obviously the previous touchdown to Ertz convert the 2-point conversion, right? So you got that fresh in your mind, but you just asked Seibert to kick a 51-yarder to get you back to 7 after that, right? So you've got recent, I guess, good karma and good memory going for you on both sides.
Yeah, you got all the momentum, and it just gets knocked the hell out of you when you miss the kick, a bad snap, a great hold by Tress.
Mm-hmm.
Just yanked it. You know, that's just that's tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. I know you're not a special teams, like, coordinator, whatever, but you've been around the game as long as you have, and you've managed everybody and whatever. Is there anything that you can pick up from a technical standpoint of what Seibert did wrong? You know, because it didn't look like the hold was bad. Like you mentioned, Tress did a good job. Can something like that screw up your approach, though, if you see that and maybe you, like, hesitate for a second and maybe it's just a slight second? I don't know what you know about kickers in that spot.
Yeah, I think the timing just gets knocked off a little bit. It's kind of like a golf swing. If somebody honks a horn in your backswing, it had nothing to do with the ball. You know, it just screwed up your mind and your tempo. I think the biggest mistake, the worst kick he had, was a kick off the Turpin. I mean, I don't know, kick the line drive right down the middle of the field, and I can't imagine that was the plan.
Well, so we'll get back to the controversial decisions in a sec, but on that, do you take any solace in that Turpin muffed it and had to go back, turn his to the one, and then he has to do like one of those joystick spinaroonies to get, like, to me, the Commanders had him. Jeremy Reeves was right there, and then the rookie Jordan McGee takes kind of a bad lane or a bad angle. He's right there, Jay.
I understand, but in that circumstance, there's only a couple players in that team that can beat you. CeeDee Lamb on a go ball or a deep ball, and then Turpin on a return. So I just don't think you want to give him an opportunity at
That's
all.
Fair.
Bang it out of the back of the end zone or try to pooch it in the corner like you did earlier in the game. But a line drive ground ball right to him, that's just too scary for me.
Understood. Is that Larry, in that spot, is that the special teams coordinator solely making that decision, or is that the head coach, or is that just a combination?
I think it had to be a bad kick. Had to be a bad kick.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because, number one, if you're going to kick it down, he was probably trying to kick it out of the back of the end zone and just didn't get it all. So it had to be the case. Or because if they're going to position kick it like you do with a new kickoff rule, you want to position it between the hash and the boundary because you can shut off half the field.
Right.
But you don't want to kick it in the middle because now everybody's got to stay in their lane. There's no way to shrink the field. And now you have give the best returner or a hell of a playmaker the ball with all kinds of room to run. I know it was lucky. It was a muff and you did a hell of a pirouette move and probably won't ever see anything like that again, but still giving him the opportunity is just what I would disagree with. The only coaching thing I would disagree with.
All right. Let me ask you about a spot we were just also talking about before you joined us. Late first quarter, up 3-0, 4th-and-2 from the Dallas 32. You either go a 51-yard field goal or you go for it with B-Rob now back in the game. And again, Jaden so far looking good as a runner. What would you have done in that spot?
I'd go for it there, you know, especially with the success and the field position. We've done a good job of playing pretty good defense, getting the ball in 4th-and-2. I think I'd go for it there, especially with the way Jaden looked yesterday as far as running the football. Mm-hmm. There's so many different options, and they've been so successful on 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-1 and 2 throughout the season earlier in the year that I know Cliff has a lot of good plays for that down in distance, whether it's the inside zone, zone read off of it, the people coming back around, pinning, pulling, whatever it is. I think they had a lot of good options. Although Dallas was playing some pretty good defense this game, but 4th and 2 for Jaden Daniels with the RPOs and the zone reads and the inside zones, I think I would have given that a shot.
I'm with you. I had a bigger, I guess, issue, not that my opinion matters, with him not going for it in that spot, because I would have done the same thing. We were just talking about that, as opposed to, again, the extra point decision at the end. If you have to choose between the two, I would have rather of him, you know, gone for it in the spot we're talking about, late first quarter, than the extra point. And I agree with a lot of what you said about, you know, feeling like you're the better team and, you know, being at home and all that stuff. All right. So good stuff on that. All right. So let's move to this. I thought, Jay, for 3.5 quarters, Jaden, you know, from a passing perspective, the results were terrible. You mentioned the field position. We've all been talking about the wasted opportunities. From a throwing perspective, did you see anything that jumped out, or was that all Cowboy pressure? Because I thought live, and some of what I've watched back on All-22, it looked like he may have left a little bit too early and was trying to get around some of the pass rush and penetration.
I think a couple times he missed a couple throws there. He missed a corner route to the tight end, overthrew him a little bit, just didn't put a lot of air on it. You overthrow a go ball to Terry McLaurin. Wasn't great separation, but that's not a high percentage throw. There was some great coverage on third down. You know, the only thing I would disagree on maybe as an outsider looking in is there was a couple third downs they tried to force in Noah Brown. And if you want to throw it to Noah Brown, flip the formation and let Terry have that key down on third down. Let him work at the slant or let him work the curl coming back to the quarterback. And two of those plays got broken up on a key third down play and ended up not getting any points out of it. But other than that, I think he didn't have a lot of wide open throws or some pressure. But I thought the drives where he had to get the ball, throwing it, the 2-minute drive, he looked extraordinary getting the team back in the hunt. Not just the 90 yarder to Terry, but the other touchdown drive, he was accurate and spinning it really well.
Yep, absolutely. And obviously looked much, much more involved and better as a runner. So I guess we can put the injury thing to bed now. So how do you explain? All right. Terry didn't get a target on, he got the target on the deep ball late first quarter after the turnover, which is exactly what I thought they would do. I said that on the show, right? So that was a good spot. But that was his only target, I think, until very late in the first half, like the final minute of the first half. How do you, there are teams, CeeDee Lamb, perfect example, right? CeeDee didn't have a great game yesterday, but he had, 15 targets, 12 catches for, 12 targets, 10 catches, 67 yards. So how do you explain why other teams can get high-volume targets to their guys, regardless of success, yet it always seems like with Terry, it's, I don't want to say feast or famine, Jay, but there's a lot of first halves where there's just nothing cooking in that regard.
Well, I think Dallas lines him up in different spots, and they use him on jet sweep. He had two catches on jet sweep plays. That doesn't count. But he can also line up at number 2 in the 3-by-1s, and number 1 in the 3-by-1s, and number 3 in the 3-by-1s. He can line up on the left or the right, and they move him around. So the play, when you do a pure progression play, the number 1 progression usually goes to CD, and if they double him or whatever, then you go to number 2 Shoemaker, number 3 whoever their third receiver is. I think a lot of times in Washington it is just formation. Terry's always on the same side, Noah's always on the same side, and they just call plays, so sometimes he's not involved, he's not the number 1 primary guy, where, you know, if you're going to run a post and a sail route, they're going to put CD on the sail route because that's the guy they're going to try to get the ball to, and if they can't, they'll throw the flat route to the tight end. That doesn't always happen with Washington. They just call whoever's in that formation. Yeah. That's a big difference.
But it seems like since you've left here, it seems like that's always, it's been a repetitive problem. Scott Turner, Eric Bieniemy, you just go the first half and dude has one target, and I'm like, how? Why? I don't know. I know you just explained it, so I don't want you to have to explain it again, but it just seems like others make a better attempt, and it's not just Cliff Kingsbury is my point.
Yeah, sometimes the coverage dictates it. Sometimes when you have a guy like Terry and there's not a lot of other guys on the team you have to worry about, you can roll to him. You know, there's a lot of times where in the red zone, Washington tried to roll the CD. In fact, on the touchdown to Shoemaker, they busted the coverage. They tried to double CD, and they forgot to cover the tight end.
Right. Okay, so that's what happened on that. Right. Okay.
Yeah, there are ways to take out your number one guy, and that's when the other guys have to hurt you, so you get more single high, more honest coverages. But, you know, it's hard sometimes. I called a game in Cincinnati in a playoff game, and at the end of the first half, A.J. Green didn't have a target, and I was almost ready to jump off the top rope of the locker room and land on my quarterback for not throwing the ball. So his quarterback has a lot to do with it too. They got to understand.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the other part of this is you could design a play where your number one guy is the ideal target, but it doesn't mean it's going to get there because of coverage or because of a look or because of just, you know, whatever. I mean, so a quarterback obviously could get off of that and go somewhere else, and then all of a sudden it looks like you're not featuring your number one guy. So that's a good point. Yeah. Jay Gruden is with us at @coach_JayGruden on X. He is brought to you by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. One play I wanted to ask you about, the interception by Chauncey Golston that goes off of Brian Robinson's hands. Some people are saying, oh my God, Brian Robinson's got to catch that. I agree. Is that a good decision by Jaden on a play that seemingly is going nowhere? Should he have done something different?
Yeah, that's something I used to tell the quarterbacks, don't make a bad play worse. And you know, you call a screen pass to the back, that's great. When they work, they pop out of there, everybody's high-fiving. If somebody's tailing the back, you throw it in the dirt and just get on with the day. It goes 2nd and 10. That ball should have been in the dirt. Okay. There's no reason to try to line drive a ball to B-Rob. B-Rob doesn't have the most natural hands as it is, but to throw a hard fastball right at his gut, that's not a good call, especially with a guy hanging on his back. That should have been in the dirt.
I agree. That's what I thought last night. Now, in the moment, I didn't necessarily think about that, but after watching it back slowly last night, I totally agree, so I'm glad.
Well, even if he caught it, it would have been a loss of 5.
Right, exactly. It would have been swallowed up. There's just almost nothing good. I suppose, theoretically, that you could break a tackle, but there's almost nothing good percentage-wise that can come out of that play.
He wasn't breaking that tackle. That guy was all over.
Exactly. All right. From a big picture standpoint, before we move on to a couple of other things, 3 losses in a row. You have a tough Tennessee defense. Levis is up and down. I mean, I know he's talented, but he also makes some bird brain mistakes. What would be the message that you're preaching to your team off of 3 losses in a row, and especially what most people are considering an inexcusable loss?
Yeah, I think we have to have a sense of urgency to get back to work and practice and play hard and get out of the gate. We got to get out of the gate fast against Tennessee. Tennessee's coming off an emotional win, but the one thing Tennessee's done, they've turned the ball over a lot. And we got to create turnovers defensively. We got to get after Levitz, make sure we cover, get the back end covered so it really doesn't hurt us deep. And obviously they're going to try to feature Pollard. Callahan's going to try to come in here and flex his muscles with his cool little run game. But offensively, we got to get after him on defense. I know they have a good defense. Simmons is awesome. Harold Landry's a good pass rusher, but I think it might be just a little bit of time early on here to get after him through the air. I really do. With the running back situation the way it is, and I think the way Jaden finished that game against Dallas, he can sit back in the pocket, pick people apart. I think I'd like to be a little bit more aggressive with the passing attack, then mix in the inside zones and the draws and the zone reads, but feature some of his drop back passing and see what happens.
You going to invite the Callahans over for Thanksgiving at the Grudens?
Yeah, right. Maybe Brian. I like Brian. Brian's a nice guy.
I had to, Jay. I'm sorry. I don't know how many people know that, but I had to. Okay. I got the answer that I'm looking for. That's great. All right. So around the NFL, let's start with the game tonight, which hasn't happened yet. Brothers, Harbaugh, all this stuff. Doesn't look like Roquan Smith's going to play for the Ravens. They're saying unlikely with the hamstring. Henry, obviously, you know, like what do you expect in this game besides probably low scoring, or do you expect something different?
I think I expect something different. I originally thought it was going to be a ball control game with people just trying to run the ball, get first downs, and eat up the clock. But I think really the way to attack Baltimore right now is through the air. Their secondary is not very good. They have the number one run defense in the league. And J.K. Dobbins, you know, I mean, they're going to try to run a little bit. But Justin Herbert, the way he's throwing the ball, I got to give him some opportunities to push the ball down the field to, you know, to Palmer and Jefferson or Johnson, whoever it is, and obviously McConkey. So they have good weapons, and the way Justin Herbert throws it, he can run with his legs. I think I expect that. And then defensively or offensively for the Ravens, I think they've got hammered with the Derrick Henry thing. They're going to try to hammer Derrick Henry. I think Perriman might be out for the Chargers, so they're minus a linebacker. So get after him through the ground and let Lamar do his thing off the play actions.
Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos are surging, and a lot of people, you know, who do the gambling stuff for a living are saying, oh, Bo Nix is now the favorite to win offensive. I don't care anything about that, but he's played really well. I can't remember if we talked about this or not earlier in the season. Like, the fit with him and Sean Payton seemed right, even if he was overdrafted in most reasonable eyes. How did you see that whole situation, and what have you seen from Bo Nix as the season has gone along?
Improvement, lots of improvement, and Sean's getting to know him, and Bo's getting more comfortable with the offense. Bo doesn't make many mistakes. You know, that's the one thing. He was at Oregon. He did not make a lot of mistakes. He threw a lot of checkdowns, threw a lot of shorter passes. That's why he was later picked in the first round. Wasn't one of the top three, because nobody really could see him showcase his arm talent, you know, like a Jaden or a Caleb Williams or Drake May. But this guy's a game manager, and he does a great job. Throws an accurate ball for the most part in the underneath stuff. He struggles with the intermediate stuff, but he can also run, and he's utilizing his weapons very well. He's doing a good job, but defensively is what's the big deal. Their defense is really good. They're keeping them in the game. They're giving them good field position and getting the ball for them back. Bo doesn't have to score every time he has the ball, and Sean calls a good game for him.
5-6 heading to Buffalo for Sunday Night Football after a 38-10 pounding. The game was fairly tight, 17-10, most of the, you know, midway through the third quarter, and then the Packers just unloaded on Kyle and the 49ers. How much trouble with all the injuries are the 49ers in? I mean, it looks like a lot.
Yeah, they're not very good, you know.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But defensively is the biggest thing they got to worry about. Offensively, you got to feel the great Shanahan will come up with some points. But defensively, the Packers kind of did whatever they wanted, especially running the football. And if you give up runs and you can't stop the run, then your defense is going to be in major hell. So That's where they're at right now. And offensively, they're just, you know, Debo's not making the plays that he normally makes. They miss Ayuk, obviously, and McCaffrey's just trying to get back in gear, and backup quarterback's in there. So they can't match point for point with a team that can score a lot. And Buffalo's going to score, so I don't think San Fran can keep up.
All right, I'll wrap it up with this. Tampa crushed the Giants 30-7. Tommy DeVito and all that didn't create any magic, just ambush. But that's not what I care about. I care about how you would have dealt with the Malik Nabers situation, because clearly he's talented, very frustrated, basically pointing the finger. It sounds like at Dable, it seems like Dable and he had both meetings last night and this morning. You dealt with a very... what's the nicest way I can say this? Very competitively frustrated Pierre Garçon a lot, and that causes some issues, and I get it. How would you have dealt with the whole Malik Nabers thing, knowing that he is a big part of what you're trying to turn around?
Well, he's right. You know, as a coach, you got to get your best player the ball, especially when you have a young quarterback or Tommy DeVito starting out. Give him a quick screen, give him a hitch, give him something, let him try to get a break a tackle. He's very good at the ball in space, and for him not to have a touch in the first half, I could see a quarter. Mm-hmm. I could see maybe five possessions if you go three and out and you're not getting any opportunities, but the whole half is unbelievable. Plus, he's on my fantasy team. I was like, what the hell? Where is he? You know, but yeah, I think you just got to sit down and talk it out as men and understand the frustration is real for him and the frustration is real for the coach, and the coach is doing the best they can, but the coach has got to do better. And the player has to do better as well in this week's of practice, and they'll try to do a better job of giving the ball. But it's never a good situation. You're down 30 to nothing. There's going to be some chirpers after the game when you're losing 30 to nothing to the Bucks.
No doubt. Attaboy, Jay. I know you're not a big cooker, so I'm not going to ask what you're going to cook for Thanksgiving. The plan is what? Just to eat and maybe do some dishes? Is that the Jay Gruden game plan?
Going down to Daytona to see my son, Joey, who coaches at Stetson University basketball. They just had a baby girl, the first girl Gruden ever in this world.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Congratulations.
We're
going to
go visit them and feed her some turkey and go from there.
Attaboy, attaboy. Well, you be safe. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the entire Gruden family. I appreciate you as always, and I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is Jay Gruden on air and on the road. Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly and Fairfax F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.